This is WRCR Haberstraw. It's now time for Faith Unscripted with Pastor Rich.
Good morning and welcome to Faith Unscripted, a weekly program devoted to all things spiritual, hosted by the Reverend Richard Hasselbeck, pastor of the historic Clarkstown Reformed Church, located at 107 Strohtown Road in West Nyack. Our services are every Sunday morning at 10:30. All of our listeners are cordially invited. If you would like to speak with Pastor Rich, by all means, please give us a call at 845-429-1700. That number again, 845-429-1700. That was almost memory unscripted for a moment. Good morning, Pastor.
Yes,
how are
Vince
you?
Just had that, oh my goodness, I don't remember the telephone number look in his eyes, but fortunately I have it written down. So we were saved.
I would like to just take a moment, Pastor, and acknowledge the passing of a lovely lady, Jenny Genka Tulevich, passed away last Friday night, aged 98 years, 6 months to the day. Jenny was a retired administrator and accomplished artist who will be very missed by her friends and loved ones. Our prayers and condolences go out to the Tulevich family.
Yes, and Sonia, her daughter, is a member of the Clarkstown Reformed
yes,
Church.
Yes, she is.
And Sonia, we grieve with you as you grieve, and we pray for your family. May the Lord, in his love and mercy, lift the grief from you and your brother and all who miss your mom. And may he give you the peace of knowing that she is with him, and with him there is no pain or suffering ever.
Amen.
Amen. It's 97, though. That's quite a run.
98 and a half.
98
amazing.
And a half. Amazing. Not bad. Not bad at all.
And she was. She was an amazing, amazing lady with a wonderful sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. There's a story about a little boy who went to his grandfather and says, "Grandpa, how old are you?" And Grandpa said, "I'm 90, son." Little boy said, "90? I never want to be 90. Grandpa said, "Spoken like a man who's never been 89. So no matter how long life goes, there's always the next day that we long for, because life fundamentally is beautiful.
Yes,
and
it is.
Even the good days and the bad days. I remember years ago, an old friend of mine, Warren Ruderman. Warren was a member of my church back years ago, and he was a world-class physicist. He did some pioneering work. He had a PhD from Columbia, and he was not only a brilliant man, he was so nice. He was kind. He was good. He was funny. I just loved him. I loved him to pieces. And he passed away of cancer, and I was with him and his wife towards the end. And Warren, being a sort of a very practical guy, was saying to his wife, "Find me a doctor who will end this for me. You know, I just want a good old shot of morphine, and I want to go off because this is too much." And I'll never forget what she said to him in response. Her name was Betty. She said, "Honey, don't you realize that every moment I have with you is precious? Every moment." Now, she knew that the moments ahead of her and her husband were not going to be great moments, as the world would judge greatness. But every moment to her was precious. And what can we learn from that? We can learn in our own lives that everything is precious. I mean, there are going to be good days, there are going to be bad days, there are going to be mediocre days, there are going to be days when you feel blah, and every one of those days is filled with precious moments. And the trick to seeing the value and the beauty in those moments is to live in them. To not live ahead of them and to not live behind them, but to live in the moment. Because the moment we have is the only moment in which we get to live. the past is over. And it can bother us if we let it. But there's nothing we can do about it. We can't change a decision. We can't change a behavior. We can't change anything about what happened yesterday, or last week, or last month, or last year. Nor can we predict the future. So, yes, I mean, there's a certain prudence to being prepared for things, but we live now, in this moment. And whatever it is a gift. It is something that's precious if we see it correctly. You know, in Saint-Exupéry's little book for children and adults, the Little Prince, Le Petit Prince, he has the fox saying that it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Let me do that again, because it's a very profound and extraordinarily accurate portrayal of life. It is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. So one of the tricks of seeing the precious moments of our lives as they move past, one after the other after the other, is to try to see them with the heart. And what does that mean? It means to embrace them in the fullness of their reality. And not just to see the bare material facts that surround us, but to begin to grasp the meaning of those facts, so that we begin to see the essence of things rather than just seeing things on the surface. And I think that's what Saint-Exupéry meant by seeing with the heart. And I think that's what we need to do if we are to appreciate every single moment of the precious gift that we call life. So, God bless you, Genka, and may God bless and be with and lift the grief from your family. And may they know that even these moments of grief are precious if they see them with the heart. It's with some sadness that I was listening to Jeff do the news today and report that a synagogue in Muncie had been desecrated, essentially desecrated, by a man, I'm guessing he's a young man, who has been charged with a hate crime. But I want to look beyond the man who did that that act of desecration, and I want to just look at the anger and the hatred that we see in the world around us. And the desecration of a synagogue is an example of anger that cries out and lashes out at innocent people who are simply trying to do the best they can and make the most they can of their lives. And what's a synagogue? A synagogue is a house of prayer, and it's a house of God. So when you lash out of the synagogue, in essence, you are not only lashing out at the believers in that synagogue, in our Jewish brothers and sisters who worship there and who read Torah there and who reflect on the Torah there. It is an assault on God Himself. And so where does that anger come from? Where does that frustration and that hatred come from? The hatred, and I'm going to focus on the hatred and discrimination against the Jews, because it's such an ancient plague on the world. Why the Jews? The Jews are a peace-loving, kind people. They live at peace with their neighbors. They have unique customs. Don't we all? You know, they cluster in communities. Nothing wrong with that. And they try to live their own lives at peace. Why attack them? You know, are all our Jewish neighbors perfect? Of course not. Are any of us, or is any of us perfect? Same answer. Of course not. So yeah, we make our mistakes and we bump into each other as we live together and share a planet and a community. But we must live in tolerance and in love. Or else we will not survive. So this hatred that sort of grips the heart and makes somebody want to lash out, I honestly don't know where it comes from or who gins it up or how it's ginned up. But it's a manifestation of evil and an attack on a synagogue or a church, for that matter, is an attack against the very presence of God in our world. And there is an aspect of life right now, an aspect of humanity that has become disconnected from all faith. And because of that disconnect, these people look at faith with jaundiced eyes, seeing nothing in our synagogues and in our churches but worthless dogma and perhaps hypocrisy. That is an attitude born of ignorance. That is an attitude that completely negates the fact that so much in our life and in our world is here because of the goodness of religion and religious people. We wouldn't have universities had they not been established in Europe in the Middle Ages by the Dominicans and the Franciscans, by the people of faith who wanted to explore the universe of knowledge in their belief that every branch of knowledge leads to God. So St. Bonaventure, 1300s, I think he's mid-1300s, mid-century. He writes the Itinerarium Mentis in Deum, the journey of the mind into God. He wrote it, I believe, on Good Friday. It's a short book. And his premise is that every aspect of knowledge is like a rung in a ladder. And as you climb the ladder, you reach the divine. You reach God. And he says, when you reach God, you stand in awe before him because the mind can't grasp God. The mind can journey to him. The mind can reason that I stand before that which I do not know. That the mind can conclude that there is a wisdom that lies at the heart of things. And before the mystery of that wisdom, we stand. Only the heart can take you into that mystery. Because what we cannot know, we can still love. And so universities are there because of that insight. In America, Harvard, Princeton, yeah, they're all started as divinity schools to train ministers for this new world that was the home of many religious refugees who came to the shores of America looking for religious freedom that they couldn't find in their home countries, in England, in France, and in Holland. Well, Holland was very tolerant, to tell you the truth. So where do hospitals come from? Hospitals were founded, again, in the Middle Ages to care for the sick. And they were founded by religious orders, I think mostly of nuns. Now, it's even the old nursing costumes with those funny white hats and everything. They're a tuned down version of a sister's habit. So what do we have in the world today? We have schools, we have hospitals, we have healthcare, and all of that is started by people who are religious. Why did they start it? Because they love life. Because they see all of life as a gift from God. And that gift is something that they want to honor and cherish. So when we lash out, or when someone lashes out at a synagogue or at a church, it is an act of mindless desecration against a tradition that has brought so much good into the world. Look at the gift of the Jews. Look at all that we have in terms of science and philosophy. That we have because the Jewish people are who they are. One of the greatest public intellectuals of this century or the last century, Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, God rest his soul, prolific author, profoundly compelling speaker, and he was who he was because of his love for his Jewish faith. It formed him, and through that formation, he was able to help the world see how goodness and truth and love must be a part of who we are, or we will perish in the process of tearing each other apart with hatred. So when you see an act of hatred like this, it's not enough to simply charge the offender with a hate crime, and it's a modestly significant. I mean, I think they charged him with a misdemeanor, so it's like not that serious of a charge, really. But if we fail to recommit ourselves to living together in loving tolerance of other people who we don't quite understand, and maybe who don't quite understand us. But we're here and we're together and we can embrace them. What we don't understand, we can still love. Just like Bonaventure's notion of knowledge that rises to the point of being aware that we stand before mystery. When we stand before each other as individuals and as communities, we stand before mystery. None of us can plumb, even a husband and a wife can't know each other exhaustively. They pledge to live together in faithful love until parted by death. But when they make that promise, and most folks make that promise when they're fairly young, they do it not knowing exhaustively the person to whom they are committing. And the vows of marriage say, I'm launching out in a mysterious journey with you, and whatever happens, and however we develop, and whatever rough seas we may sail through, that I'm with you, and I will love you, and I will cherish you, and I will understand you. Back to the words of Warren Rudiman's wife, Betty. Honey, every moment I have with you is precious. Well, married folks who are out there listening to us, every moment you have with each other is precious. And in our communities, every moment we have coexisting with each other is precious. Go to the store and learn something about someone. Don't go as an atomized person and like run around in a little bubble that doesn't encounter or engage anyone. Enjoy the humanity that you're with. Not terribly long ago, I went up on a Sunday afternoon to Bear Mountain, and it was a after getting through the traffic jam and the parking nightmare, it was a wonderful experience. because I walked with a friend around the lake.
Hessian Lake. Right?
Hessian Lake, yeah. And there was just a sea of people. And there were Hasidic Jews, there were Muslims. I took them to be Pakistanis. There were all sorts of Hispanic people, and it's just a sea of humanity. There were families playing with each other. There were little kids. There were teenagers, but it was life at play, and everyone was enjoying themselves together. Not engaging completely together, but it was a beautiful network of life, and it was fun to see it. And you can have that fun anywhere, as long as you look. And you can have it at the grocery store if you go there. You can see it in the eyes of the kid who checks you out. You can see it in a conversation you have with somebody who's helping you. One of the employees of the store who's cutting your bologna for you. You can see it if you look, but when we are not looking for something, it is easily overlooked. And I think that's one of the challenges that we have in life, to live with awareness. Martin Heidegger, the great German philosopher, again, not without his flaws, believed that you could not live authentically unless you lived with care. And what he meant by care is presence. In another part of his teaching, he says to live with care, to live authentically, you have to realize you're being unto death. And by being unto death, he means that we have to realize that we don't have all the time in the world. Because if we have all the time in the world, we can waste it. But if we have a sense that we are timed, and we don't know how we're timed. Genka Talevich had a lot of time, as the world sees time, as we see time, 98.6 years. But I've lost friends in their 50s.
40s.
My sister died when she was 56. Mm-hmm. So we don't know the end game. We don't know how long we get to play the game. We just know today we're playing it. So when we get up, if we waste time, it never comes back, because time is unidirectional. Time is something, there's an old saying, three things come not back: the spent arrow, the spoken word, and time. So get up and begin to live with care, knowing that this day is precious. How do we squander time? What are the ways we waste it?
Take it for granted.
Take it for granted.
Right. Especially when you're young.
Mm-hmm.
Because the perception is there that you have so much of it ahead of you.
That's right. You think of all the time in the world when you're a kid.
Of course, when you're in your 60s, you start looking at your watch a little more often.
Yes, it gets a little low. It's no longer our friend.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, think of the time wasters that we have. One of the biggest ones is the television. You know, spend night after night mindlessly watching some ridiculous TV drama that is not only not only ridiculous, it's predictable, and you've wasted an hour, 2 hours, 5 hours, 10 hours a day. I mean, those devices that we glue our eyes to, the iPhones, the iPads, whatever the other things. What are some of the other devices, Vince?
Computer
screens,
PCs, right?
Yeah.
Your laptops, your pads,
And some of that makes life easier. I mean, I write, and it's nice to word process on a computer, but
you have the collective knowledge,
right,
of humankind at your fingertips.
Yes. Well, you think you do.
Well, you do if you use it that way.
If you use it correctly,
you have access to it.
you have access to a lot of information.
Right.
Sorting through the information to know what's good information, what's bad information, what's good news, what's false news. That's an art. But I would say one of the things we can do is unplug from a lot of those devices and begin living together instead of living in front of a screen. So, for example, how would we recreate family life or revive it? Well, instead of having dinner in front of a television, dinner together. How many of you out there listening have dinner with your spouse, with your kids, with your loved ones? But eating together is a sacred thing. You know, for a Jew at the time of Jesus, to eat alone would be embarrassing. Of course, they couldn't eat in front of a television set because, blessedly, that hadn't been invented and wouldn't be for another couple of thousand years. But eating with loved ones was the norm. You know, they would be surprised about people who can go and have a hamburger at McDonald's all by themselves. So how can we revive family meals? I mean, when I was a kid, Vince, I don't know about you, but growing up, it was breakfast with my mom. My dad had gone to work by that time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then at dinner time, my sister, my mom, and dad and I would all sit around the table and we'd talk and talk about things that were happening in our lives.
After mom played town crier to get you to come in.
That's right.
You'd
that's
be
right.
Outside playing
if you were
day,
playing, that's right.
Don't make me call twice.
That's right. But now it shouldn't have to cry too far because the kids are upstairs on their devices
or
separately
on
playing games.
On a play date.
Yes. How about activities together?
Mm-hmm.
You know, families that, like the families that I saw at Bear Mountain, out there enjoying each other's company, hanging out together, barbecuing, having a meal. Talking, playing, walking, strolling, enjoying great weather. The state park system in New York, it's a wonderful thing to have, and it's not a bad thing to use. We got to get ourselves out of our devices and into real life. How about playing games?
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite memories from being a kid was playing games after dinner. We'd often play.
Yeah,
you know, a game of Clue or
Scrabble,
board game Scrabble, or cards. So, what are the activities that your family can enjoy? To catch? How about going out and playing catch with your kids? If you've got young kids or even adolescents.
Some of the best memories I have with my dad.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So creating good memories is making life precious, and we need to, I think, begin to recover that sense of careful living, so that we don't miss the opportunities that life presents us to grow together in love with the people who are closest to us, and you can extend that out. By looking at what we can do in local communities. I mean, at Clarkstown Reformed Church this Sunday, we're all going on a baseball outing.
That's right. That's right.
Up to Boulder Stadium to root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame.
I believe they're playing the Invaders from Ottawa.
What is it, the
Canadian team? No, not the Invaders. No, I branded.
I know they're. Yes, they are from Ottawa. They are from Ottawa, though.
That's
so.
Right.
So if they don't win, it's really a shame. So, but there's a you know, larger communities can also do stuff together that's just fun, and that having joy together, having fun together, playing together, is a tremendously powerful community builder. So, again, we'd like to hear from you if anybody's has a thought about this or anything else.
Pick up that phone.
Pick up your phone.
Or your cell phone.
And
or your iPad.
That's right.
Or your
No, use it.
Put them to good use. Give us a call at 845-429-1700.
What's that number again?
I believe it still is 845-429-1700.
All right.
It is also a throwback to that day and age before we were digitized, when we were still analog, where there was the human element involved in everything.
That's right.
Where you didn't get a recorded voice saying, okay, got it. We're offering you what language you'd like to speak in.
Yeah.
Without even knowing why you're calling.
Well, and one of the great spiritual journeys of modern life is the journey out of the digital world back into the analog world, where people are real people,
yes,
where they have
exactly
real flesh
right.
and blood communities, where they see each other, talk to each other, and do all that sort of stuff.
And it's such an impersonal world that we're in. You know, that's the old joke. You know, it's like, oh, hello, suicide prevention hotline. Please hold. You know, wait a minute. So,
I think we have a caller, Vince.
Good morning, caller. You are on the air with Pastor Rich.
Hello, this is Sonia Tulevich.
Hello,
Sonia. How are you?
I am very grateful for your kind thoughts and words and prayers, and it means a lot to me. God bless you both.
Well, thank
you. Vince, you have been my rock. I love you very much.
Well,
and
thank
you. And as I go by these days of grief, I slowly am progressing, and I just wanted to say how very wonderful so many people have been. Yesterday I had the joy of having a meal with wonderful Irene from CRC.
She is wonderful, yes.
She's a wonderful lady, and I've known her for years, and I'm so glad she's discovered Clarktown Reformed Church. She and her husband love it so much. And I look forward to coming back. I did have to stay home and help take care of my mom and just process things. But thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Oh, you're most welcome. Our prayers continue to go with you, so you be blessed and feel blessed.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
God bless you, sweetheart.
Okay, darling. Bye-bye.
God bless again. And I think we have yet another caller.
Speaking of
blessed,
yes. We are blessed with another caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the air with Pastor Rich.
Caller, are you there? Oops. We are trying to get you up if you're there, and if you're not there, call back.
Don't let the gremlins win.
Yes, right. Do we have you now? Lost you. Please call back.
We implore you, please call back. The number again, 845-429-1700.
Yes. And I guess I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Supreme Court decisions this week that have an impact on religion.
Indeed.
And while you may think I'm about to talk about overturning Roe versus Wade, I'm not, at least in the first instance, because I want to talk about the prayer ruling.
Yes.
A coach at a high school in the West Coast had a practice of, after a game, going to the midfield and saying, just kneeling down and praying privately. And for that, he was disciplined and fired. And this week, in a 6-3 ruling, the Supreme Court affirmed that his expression of faith privately is his right under the First Amendment. And it would just as much as after a game, you could talk to somebody about the stock market prices, or call a friend and set up a dinner appointment. He has every right to pray, and to pray privately, but to pray in that public setting. And I think that's a victory for the presence of faith in the public square. This man was not acting as coach, he was acting as believer. And as a believer, he has a profound faith in God. He has a right to express that. And expression is never private. When you express things, you do them so that it can be a part of the world around you. And it just like speech is never private. If you speak to yourself, you're heading towards the loony bin. We speak because there are others to whom we speak. And we express our faith because it's a good thing for us to allow our friends, family, others to know, not as coach, but as just a human being. I believe and I give thanks to God for all things. So that sense of public prayer is a very good thing.
Indeed, it was also the paranoia dictates that it was an exercise in doctrinal proselytizing.
Yeah,
which it was not.
So good ruling. Thanks, Supreme Court.
Good morning, caller. You are on the air with Pastor Rich.
Good morning.
Jimmy,
how are you?
I am okay, thank you. I'm just calling, make it a real short one. I'd like to wish everybody who listens to the station Happy Independence Day. I'd like to wish you, Pastor, and your congregation Happy Independence Day.
Thank you.
And everything else that you were talking about before. That's it.
Well, thank you very much. Jimmy, it's always good to hear you.
Thank you so much, likewise.
And while we're talking about Independence Day, let's reflect back for just a moment on the brave men and women who risked their lives and gave their lives so that this nation could become and could become as great as it has become. So in the first instance, on July 4th, this bunch of farmers and planters and lawyers and printers, this collection of patriots who believed that England, across the ocean, did not have their best interest at heart, and that England was imposing laws on them that were unjust, and that they didn't have a say in Parliament. So how could these parliamentary laws be just and be fair? And so they saw this as tyranny. They gathered together, and who were they? They were a bunch of pipsqueaks in Philadelphia. They weren't terribly important. They had no army to speak of. They were facing down the king and parliament of the world's superpower.
Right, correct.
And one of the world's superpowers.
But at that time, expressed in terms of its naval power.
That's right. So England ruled the seas.
That's correct.
And we were on the other side of an ocean, so nobody else could help us a whole lot because they had the boats. And what these people did, these patriots, is they gave us a declaration of independence that expressed clearly why they felt they must do what they were doing, in spite of the fact they knew that they risked death doing it. England didn't mess around. Benjamin Franklin said famously, "Gentlemen, we must hang together lest we hang separately." So this wasn't a slam dunk that they would win this conflict. What they did because they believed in the providence of God. And they believed that God, the Creator, endowed all people with certain unalienable rights. The right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to pursue happiness.
Now, and these inalienable rights, though, are bestowed upon us by
God,
not
by God.
People. Right.
They are endowed, they wrote, by their Creator. with these unalienable rights. And so the government that they established, first by the Declaration of Independence, a magnificent document, then by the Constitution later on, will enshrine that those liberties and what they mean. That we have a right to life and to freedom within the course of our lives. And that freedom means we get a say in government. The freedom means we can't be coerced by government to do that which jeopardizes our life. Look at these the mandates, right? The vaccine mandates. More and more information is coming out showing how deadly dangerous the vaccines and the booster shots are. I mean, if you look at the reports of young people dying of pericarditis, healthy kids having heart attacks right on athletic fields. There's a new thing now, sudden adult death syndrome. A friend of mine who was recently boosted was having breakfast with his wife, and he collapsed in his at the table and died. 70 years old.
Oh.
70 years old. Just 70. Just turned 70.
Wow.
So there are reasons why people will say, hey, I'm not interested in that shot. Thank you very much. Mm. That's fine. If you want the damn thing, take it. I mean, but be informed, and don't be coerced. And the employers, who are and the local governments even who are forcing, their employees and public employees, to either take the jab and the boosters, or lose their job. That is insidious, because people have a right to life and to liberty and to pursue their happiness as they see fit. And this take a shot or else approach to the vaccine becomes frighteningly close to totalitarianism.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, it does.
It becomes frighteningly close to a vast medical experiment in which we, my brothers and sisters, are the guinea pigs. And the God who gave us life gave us liberty. And we have a human and civil right to bodily integrity. Nothing must be forced upon us absent our informed consent.
And the imposition of that is antithetical to what it is to be American.
That is exactly. Correct. That is correct. So the world of vaccine and mask mandates is a world that our founding fathers would be horrified by. And I get that there was a panic over the pandemic. And let me remind us that the pandemic is COVID virus, the COVID-19 virus, is a virus that puts the young and healthy at almost no risk. There is a 99.99-something recovery rate. It's not the kiss of death. This isn't the Black Death of the Middle Ages by any stretch of the imagination. We have been terrorized into thinking you get it and you croak, but you don't. And in fact, now we are seeing that people who have taken the vaccine are not immune from getting the virus, are not prevented from transmitting the virus, and get as sick as anybody else if they do get the virus. And what's worse, they seem to be losing immunities, and so they get sicker than people who have not been vaccinated. So, at least according to the best information that I have, this is something that should be researched and looked at very, very, very carefully. Bobby Kennedy, who I respect a great deal, no conservative nut, he wrote a book, The Real Anthony Fauci, and he, in a very well-documented work, shows all of the problems with the vaccine and the vaccine development. It's still only emergency authorized, so that there haven't been the types of clinical trials that we would expect of drugs on the market. So for all of those reasons, yes, if you want to get vaccinated, that should be available to you, but do your homework. And if you don't want to get vaccinated, there should be no reprisals. Because when they start dividing us into a world of the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, it looks dangerously like the division that Hitler put in his Germany.
I was going to say, like the symbol that was put in the walls of that synagogue.
Yeah.
Which was a result of ignorance of what the Nazis did. And it should be remembered, the Nazis actually documented what they did. Not by just writing it down, they filmed it.
Yeah.
Anyone with even a simulacrum of decency to them would completely disdain anything that represents Nazism.
That's correct. That's correct. To reawaken the specter of the Third Reich, or the evil that the Third Reich represented, or the intolerance, the hatred, the totalitarianism of Hitler and his secret police and his Gestapo and his SS troops. That is to invite back into our world a darkness that just should not be here. Although, quite honestly, the darkness never left. The darkness never left.
It assumes another name.
It
speaks a different language. It has a different symbol.
That's right. Well, yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, Hitler was defeated.
Geography.
Hitler was defeated in the 40s, but Stalin died in bed, and Stalin was even a worse murderer than Hitler.
Yeah.
And as communism and socialism, which is just a sort of a nicer name for communism, as they begin to become more and more current and more popular, I think, it's not a bad thing to realize that the communists over the course of the 20th century into the 21st century have been responsible for more murders of more people than Hitler could have dreamed of. Just recently, and I was reading this today, a Japanese... what was he? I'm forgetting his... A guy from Japan was mentioning... brought to light that the Chinese government executed a Falun Gong practitioner to get his liver to sell it on the world market. Well, we know that. We know that this is going on. That the Chinese communist regime is a brutal, heartless, evil specter in our world, and its tentacles reach much farther than China. It reaches to the United States, where many of our politicians are on the payroll. And so it's not a bad idea to know who they are and what they're doing, because the Chinese Communist Party is reaching out throughout the Third World and throughout our country and throughout Europe, I'm sure, to try to control economically, financially, the countries of the world, and to become the dominant superpower. And they're doing a darn good job. They are very, very dangerous. The communists are not our friends.
Where did COVID-19 come from?
Wuhan, in China.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And the other thing, of course, is communism is idolatrous. Communism would place the government in the place of God. And governments like to be in the place of God. You know, the divine right of kings is an example of that. The pharaoh who claimed he was God, the emperor of Rome who was the divine emperor. Those in power like to think they are have the ultimate power, and the divine power is ultimate. But only God is God, and our attempts to replace God with science, for example, will ultimately fall flat on their faces, because science has limits. Science can see the science that that they talk about now. You know, follow the science. It's mechanistic science. It's not the science at the cutting edge, which acknowledges its limits. It's the science of the of hubris, the science that says we can do anything we want to do. You want to be a man, you want to be a woman, doesn't matter what God made you, we'll change it. You want to be anything you want to be, we can do it. Science can accomplish everything. Science dominates. And you know, God will laugh at that ultimately. But they will do a lot of damage in the process. And so please be very careful as you hear people, you know, claiming to follow the science. I am reading a book, and I'm only in the first chapter of it, so I don't want to talk too much about it. But it is by Matthias Desmet, and the title of the book is The Psychology of Totalitarianism. Desmet is a Belgian. He's a brilliant scholar. He's a psychologist and psychotherapist. And he is looking at least as far as I've read the book, at the beginnings of science and how science, in its origins in the Middle Ages, really did open our minds and help us to see new things and to do new things. But he says, ultimately, the good science has arrived at what he calls surprising insights. And I'd like to talk more about those surprising insights next week, because we only have a little bit less than a minute to go.
About 15 seconds.
So let me take an opportunity to thank you all for listening to us, to ask you to come back next week. If you have a faith community, make sure you go to church on Sunday or Saturday, if you're one of our Jewish, or Friday night, really, our friends and listeners who do not have a faith community, come join us at the Clarkstown Reformed Church, 107 Strutt-Town Road, West Nyack, New York. Our service is at 10:30 on Sunday, and we'd love to see you. God bless you all, and happy Independence Day.
AM 1700, WRCR, Haverstraw.